We're excited to partner with Tock, the only unified platform for reservations, takeout, and event management. Tock is home to 7,000 restaurants, bars, wineries, and breweries. Switch to Tock today to increase your revenue and reach millions of loyal and engaged guests around the country. Quit your day job and open up a New York-style pizza shop. That's the American dream, right? 2 weeks ago, we chatted with New York's own Scar about his expanding slice shop in the Lower East Side. And because you can never get enough pizza, we're talking slice shops with another growing food entrepreneur, this time south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Today, we are talking to Rob Birdsong, owner and chief pizza maker in residence at Glide Pizza in Atlanta, Georgia. This one is special to me for a couple reasons. First, because I grew up in Atlanta and ran in some of the same circles as Rob, so we're very old acquaintances. And we got back in touch actually after Rob became a listener of the show. Rob is a career changer and listened to the pod to help get his business off the ground. And we're really excited to catch up and hear all about how it's been going.
Welcome.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here and chatting with you guys.
Yeah. It's always fun to reconnect with old friends. I'm feeling nostalgic for Atlanta right now. except for now that there's a proper slice shop, I should say. So Rob, you have such an interesting background because you like were in PR and marketing for over a decade before you started slinging pies. So tell us and our listeners a little bit about this journey.
Sure. So, well, I think to really take it all the way back, I should mention that in college, Boulder, Colorado, I had a pizza job for a good portion of my my tenure in college, and I loved that job. It was always one of my favorite jobs, even all through my career in New York, and I thought about that job a lot. And so I kind of had a first taste of the pizza life, going back into my, you know, my late teenage years. Fast forward, I moved to New York City, my very early 20s, and began a career in marketing and video production, and some as well as some event planning and event production, and you know, it was always a good, you know, stable place to be working, space to be working in New York, I should say. And, you know, I always liked it. I never would say loved it, but,
I assume as a young employee in New York, you had your fair share of slices for lunch.
For lunch and for dinner. I mean, I really used eating pizza all throughout my 20s, kind of all across Brooklyn and Manhattan. So, I was, you know, as somebody with not a ton of expendable income in New York, pizza was always there for me. And it's just kind of, you know, always had a strong place, held a strong place in my heart. So I met my girlfriend, who's now my wife. We started a family in Brooklyn. Kind of a classic story. Our first daughter was getting bigger and bigger, and our apartment was getting smaller and smaller. And we decided that it was time to pack it up. And so we came back down to Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm from. And I took a job at an marketing agency here where I was producing lots of videos. And I would come down the elevator every day in Midtown, just right around the corner from the High Museum, and walk out onto the sidewalk and head to lunch. And like so striking to me that there was like basically no pizza. I mean, it's a pizza desert here in Atlanta, especially in that neighborhood. So I was just like, wait, what the hell is going on here? There's just kind of a pretty obvious hole in the pizza market. So I was like, I think I'm gonna try and open up a pizza shop. So that's when I discovered this podcast, as a matter of fact. And it was really, I just have to say, like, so incredible to to discover this podcast and to listen to it. You know, I don't have a business partner, and I've been doing this kind of by myself this whole time, or at least getting it launched. I mean, now I've got a great staff, but I would, you know, drink my coffee in the morning and put on an episode, and you know, it feels like I know you two very well at this point, and so it's been nice. Like, I've just kind of to have that motivation and to hear from the different guests that you've had on the show. So it's kind of crazy to be here, and thank you for all of the seasons and episodes so far.
We're getting teary eyed here, Rob. We're like, it makes that this is what
why,
it's about.
Yeah, this is why we're here. I'm so excited to hear that it has helped. When did you start? When did the ideas start to take place? This was a year or two ago.
Yeah, so it was about 2 years ago. I was still had my office job, and I was kind of assessing the pizza situation in Atlanta. Coming from New York, I couldn't really find the style of pizza that I liked, and thought that I could, bring it here. So it was about 2 years ago. I wrote a business plan, which I had never done before. I courted investors, which I'd also never done before. most of them said no.
it only takes a couple.
A couple said yes. And it was kind of a weird moment in time. Like, as I was fundraising, the pandemic was really taking shape last March. And I'd set out to raise a lot more money than I ended up needing to actually need.
That's a rare story.
Do you think that was because of the pandemic, because rents went down, or?
Yeah, so basically the original model was more of a counter service, 40 or 50 seat restaurant kind of setup, and that was going to be in Midtown Atlanta. And I was raising money for that concept. Midtown Atlanta shut down. You know, there's like 90,000 people that work there, but then all of a sudden stopped going to work there. So I found this other little location off of the Beltline here in Atlanta, which is our Greenway project. It's really kind of a cool stretch of pathway that will eventually be a 22-mile circle. And it's just for runners, joggers, cyclists, roller skaters, and very pedestrian centric. And so we have now a 750 square foot space and a walk-up window. And that's where all of our business takes place. We don't allow anybody inside. We don't wait on anybody. We just give people their pizza and go back home. So that was
exactly what you needed during the pandemic.
It was a perfect pandemic. Was it a perfect pandemic business? You tell us.
Well, it was funny. I listened, I remember listening to one of your episodes, and it was about the P word, pivot. And, at that time, restaurants were all, take out this, online ordering that, how do we survive here? And so we kind of had this unique opportunity to lead with that model. And so we were really lucky. We were getting close to actually signing a lease in a building in Midtown, and they were taking forever. And that was a blessing. And so we just have this little, it's a pizza factory. I mean, there's not a lot of room in there. We have our oven, we have our mixer, we have a couple of refrigerators. And we got to work.
When did you actually take the space on the Beltline?
So we took it in June of last year, and we opened at the end of July. So we're coming up
on
a year.
Holy moly. Well, that was also the fastest turnaround ever. So not only did you not need the money that you were initially going to raise, but you also turned it around in 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, because the space that we moved into had a hood, had a grease trap, had a lot of the stuff that... we didn't need to hire an architect. We didn't need to have an expensive build out. We just kind of got our stuff in there and got going. And so it was really just kind of this scrappy mentality, which it also feels really New York to me in a way. And I love it. Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, it, like in New York, a slice shop is just that. It's a sliver of a space. It's very small. It's like you go and you like, maybe there's a couple seats, but not a ton. So I think it sounds like it ended up being true to its roots.
A utilitarian version of a restaurant, essentially.
100%.
So tell us a little bit about how you actually like came up with recipes and, you know, since you are a career changer and you had some pizza experience back, you know, in college, but otherwise, like, you know, where did you get your pizza making training?
So, so glad you asked. I was introduced to a wonderful man named Angelo Womack. He lives in Brooklyn. He is a pizza consultant. He worked at Roberta's from day one in Bushwick. He opened up a restaurant in California for many years called Rye and Oak. And he had an extensive pizza menu there. He came back to New York City. He's worked at Polly G's. He's worked at lots of different places and is a pizza wizard. And so I brought him into the mix. I admittedly am not the pizza expert. And like, I don't want to spend 10 years trying to find the perfect recipe. So Angelo was really critical player in the way that this all went down. So he was fortunate enough to work with him. He came down to Atlanta several times and helped us get the recipe dialed in. From a dough perspective, from a sauce perspective, he's helped us with some of the recipes. I mean, he's been just incredible resource, wonderful person, awesome dude, and just, you know, a kind of a secret weapon in some respects. So, Angelo Womack, he's got an account called Rad Times Pizza. Definitely worth checking out. And he's just an awesome guy. So he, and I got introduced to him from Drew Brown, who is basically Polly G's right-hand man. He opened up the Slice Shop on Greenpoint Avenue and has gone on, you know, worked with Polly G for many years. He's a close friend of mine. So he was the person who introduced me to Angelo.
I'm kind of surprised that the pizza world would be open in that way to sharing recipes, mentoring. Did you find that the pizza world has been more of a family than a competition?
I think the pizza world is very collaborative. I think the nature of pizza is one of those kind of share, like happy share foods. I think there are definitely, there's a good kind of community of pizza makers I'm discovering, and pizza entrepreneurs, and just, there's definitely like lots of places online where pizza people kind of tend to hang out and share ideas, and there's pizza podcasts out there. I think probably more so than a lot of other cuisines, to be honest. Like, I can't think of, I mean, there's the Pizza Expo every year in Las Vegas. Like, I don't think there's a hamburger expo.
No, it's true. I mean, I think about exactly what you're saying. It's like Chris Bianco and the Franks in New York City. They have a restaurant concept together, which you would have like came from Scottsdale, Arizona and opened this with the Franks. And it's like you F&F pizza.
Well, I think
it's
aside like from being just an amazing meal, pizza is also can be a very good business. So I think that there's reason that there are a lot of pizza shops all over the country, some of them terrible and a lot of them amazing.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a great business. Did you look at that part of it as part of the reason for doing it? Because it is something that gives a little bit more of a profit margin than a traditional restaurant?
Absolutely. I think kind of coming from New York too, like, you know, New York, like Jen was saying a minute ago, like, you know, a slice shop is like a sliver of a piece of property, but then like also like right next door is like the butcher and right next door is the baker. And like everybody kind of does like their one or two things. And I think that mentality I really wanted to pursue. I didn't want to have a full blown restaurant with tons of, subs and, you know, salads and lasagna. People ask us all the time, do you guys have any pasta? You know, do you have any hot wings? And the answer is always no. We have pizza, and we really just want to kind of stay in our lane and do one thing, two things, and do it really well. And so, yeah, I would say, you know, very much wanting to avoid having a big restaurant with a big menu.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to be said for focus. We always talk about this focus. We
love focus. It hasn't come back into play as much this season as it has in previous seasons, but I think almost every episode has had something about focus. And this is certainly a good point, a good part of your business, I think.
Tell us a little bit about how, like, your marketing background helped you with starting the business and what Glide is today.
Did it? Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely did. I don't have, like, a great answer kind of, like, teed up for that, but I would say, like, I don't know, like, I just feel like, you know, you want to be able to, I think you just, I mean, like, people say all the time, like, I mean, it's a really nice thing to hear, but, like, you guys do a great job on Instagram. And it's like, well, that's nice. You know, we're just trying to really just be authentic. You know, like, we share, obviously, like, lots of photos of our pizza. You know, we reshare when, you know, people have, like, our pizza at parties or picnics or whatever. And, you know, we share a lot of music. And I just, you know, try to share, like, you know, some things that are happening in the news. You know, there's always, like, a pizza story in the news. Like, and I don't know, just really trying to connect with people, like, you know, beyond, you know, in ways beyond, you know, other than just with the pizza itself. And so I think that, yeah, like, you know, there's lots of different ways that I think that you can arrive in the restaurant world, and lots of, you know, different paths. And my path seems to kind of come from a marketing exit.
You're not the only one. We actually, our very first episode, we had the guys from Butler on, and Hugo, one of the founders, came from advertising. So this is also, you know, definitely there's lots of career changers who build very successful businesses in this realm. So tell me a little bit about the response from Atlanta. Did they know what they were missing with, like, a true slice? Because, like we've talked about before, growing up there, and you're not the first New York expat to move to Atlanta. Actually, one of our very first employees who's with us for 6 years moved to Atlanta and basically wrote to us immediately and was like, what the hell with the pizza here?
Oh, my gosh.
And that was before you opened. And he was like, there is no good slice shop. So you are not the first one to have this observation. And I'm glad you're actually taking action.
I'm willing to bet he's already a customer, too. And
yeah, I'm going to text
make
him
sure Richie is on the ball with Glide.
That's so funny.
But yeah, I'm curious about the response. Like, did Atlanta know what they were missing?
People have given us the warmest welcome. It's really been humbling and just kind of incredible to experience. I think just the fact that we opened when we opened in the, you know, July of 2020. It's like we were at the depths of the coronavirus. Restaurants were closing left and right. Everyone had switched to, you know, a takeaway or a delivery model. And so I think one of the things that's led to the success so far was, you know, like, wait a minute, it's August of 2020 and I can get something new. There's something new in Atlanta right now. Like, what? So that, I think, worked to our advantage. And yeah, you know, people have really seemed to respond well to the pizza.
Are people buying slices like in New York, like, as your intention, or are people buying pies? I feel like, I don't know, but
yeah,
come in and grab a slice?
Yeah, people. I mean, so our location has a ton of foot traffic 20 feet away.
From the Beltline.
People walking up and down the Beltline all day long, and they just pop in, get their slice of pizza, and continue on their way. That happens regularly and pretty consistently. About 65 or 70% of our business is whole pies. And that's people who order on their phone, glidepizza.com, and come pick their pizza up in 30 minutes later.
And you guys have, like, a slightly unique delivery system. Is that right?
Yeah. So we don't work with any third-party apps or platforms, and we do the delivery ourselves, and the way that we deliver is on electric bicycles.
Was that choice based on just the rates of third-party, or because you wanted to do something different?
We really want to try to own our delivery model. And, you know, those companies are famous for the margins that they take away, especially from businesses our size, and, you know, who don't really have, you know, years and years of customers built in or, you know, brand new. And then the fact that we are on the Beltline really got me thinking, like,
all right, they can hit the,
let's just deliver the pizzas around on the pathway right here. Like, and it's been cool. There's a company here in Atlanta that makes electric bikes. They're called Edison Bicycles, and they are amazing machines. And we put some pizza racks on them. They're pretty souped up, and it's just been an awesome way to, I mean, it's just been, I feel like, a core piece of like our company. Like, we, you know, I would love to have a lot of pizza shops and a lot of bicycles everywhere. You know, Atlanta is thought of as in so many respects as like a car town, and it is, but like, I think, you know, if you look really closely, you can actually see, like, oh, well, there's lots of, there's a big cycle commute culture here too. And we can get our pizzas to where they need to go so much quicker, on bicycles. It generally seems like,
What's your delivery radius? Is it smaller than it would be if you were using one of the third-party providers?
It's pretty tight, but we are in an area that is pretty densely populated. So it's about a mile and a half at its furthest and half a mile at its closest. It's like a kind of a rectangle. We sort of like formed it around some natural borders. You know, like, we don't go over the big interstate 75, 85. We don't go south of I-20, which is another big one. So we're just kind of like in this, you know, probably 3 or 4 square mile radius. But yeah, I mean, the furthest away the bike driver ever goes is about a 20 minute drive.
One of the other challenges I think of having in-house delivery is this idea of staffing an employee that may have 30 minutes of sitting and waiting or 2 hours of sitting and waiting. How did you sort of meet that challenge with staffing to make sure that person was active and busy and, you know, not a drain on your payroll?
Yeah. We're really lucky. We've got this guy named Robert Mahoney who does the bulk of our delivery, deliveries. And he's just like a busy body. I mean, he's in there folding boxes. He's in there, you know, just putting stuff away. Like, he just kind of helps our overall operation run smooth in the little but important ways that are needed. But you know, most of the time he's delivering pizza, and that's, you know, great.
And so right now you have one driver, one like cycle.
We have one dedicated person now. We have two bikes.
What happens on like Friday night at 7 p.m.? How do you handle 30 deliveries? What's Robert?
We haven't quite hit that part of the delivery portion of the business. Yeah. So I mean, we'll see. We have another bike, and one of them is a cargo bike, and one of them is just a regular commuter bike. So, you know, we can, there's been a couple times when I've jumped on a bike and we've kind of tag teamed it, but for the most part, he can do it. And I would say for generally too, people tend to come to us for whatever reason, seems like.
Okay. I ask because I feel like, you know, I want to see more restaurants have a way to bring it back in-house. Because they're getting murdered on the percentages that are being taken from
Couldn't
agree service
more.
That is easier, of course, and it does give you a larger audience and those kind of things. But
you also can pay people more fairly.
Really,
the drivers don't make any
hard,
money with the
yeah.
third-party apps either, which is also like the tragedy
so I'm
about it.
I'm hoping that yours is working and continues to work as you grow, and then you put out a book about how to do it for every other restaurant in the country.
And I am all in for the electric bikes. Alex and I commute every day to work on electric bikes,
oh,
and they are like they are the thing. They
They're
are
so
the thing.
Great.
So
and,
good.
I will say too, the people at Edison Bicycles here up the street, we're sort of their guinea pigs. I mean, they are very excited about the potential. You know, they've got this new fleet of bikes now, these cargo bikes, and they're trying to also not just be an electric bicycle company for commuters. They're very much trying to break into delivery space. And so,
is there a social handle or a website? I couldn't find them on Instagram.
I believe it's Edison Bicycles or at Edison Bicycles, I think is their handle. And there's a wonderful company. And
I got it now. Edison Bicycles, yeah.
And you have
yeah.
a cute name for it, right? You call it like the Glide Ride.
We call
love.
It the Glide Ride.
They're stylish.
And yeah, they're just, you know, a fun way. We sort of play with that in our posts, like let us glide you some pizzas on our glide rides.
I actually see your bike on here. It's really rad with the yellow box on the back.
Yeah, that's a gimbal box. It's kind of crazy. Like the idea with that, of an inventor friend who lives in Colorado, and he had this idea that like, he built this box that hangs. And so when the bike turns left, the box goes right. And it keeps the center of the gravity.
So your pizza doesn't slide around.
These guys have got to get to New York. They will destroy it.
This is so genius.
It's a really awesome invention. And he's now in, he's seeing if he's,
I hope
researching
he's got
to see if he can build a business around this gimbal box.
I mean,
hello, he should patent the shit out of that.
He's working on it.
Yes, that is so genius.
Cool. Well, I don't want to divert entirely into your bike because you do have a business that is interesting and that's why we're here.
But the bike is a part of that.
Bike is amazing. Yeah.
And I'll just say one other thing too, like living in Brooklyn, and I mean, I was a big cyclist in New York City. And so it feels in another way, just like, you know, an ode to New York. We open up a pizza shop. We deliver deliver the pizzas on bikes. Like I was riding over the Williamsburg Bridge, you know, every day to get to in and out of the city, and just, you know, love riding in New York City and all the pathways and all the bike paths that are available there now. So it's just like part of kind of, you know, what we're doing here.
And was that always part of the original business plan? Like, does Glide have something to do with the bikes and everything? Or is that something you sort of figured out later when you were doing this mostly like takeout window style?
It was in the original business plan. We were going to be in Midtown, which is a heavily congested area with lots of cars. And we figured that bikes were going to be the best way to do it. And I knew I wanted to not get in bed with the DoorDashes and the Uber Eats of the world.
Is that where the name comes from?
No, the name, I don't really have a great story. I think I'll say this. Here's what I'll say. All the pizza restaurants in Atlanta seem to have names like Amaza, Antico, Fellini's, Verrazano's, Veruni.
Fellini's, yep.
And so,
and then
like,
there's Mellow Mushroom.
Like, right. And amongst the sea of Mellow Mushroom. But,
right.
I just wanted something that was easy to remember and just like one syllable, and you know, not a multi-syllable Italian origin name. So so maybe that answers your marketing question, Jen. Like just something that was easy and, you know, kind of sticky.
It is definitely sticky, and your logo is very cute. Alex actually remarked that was like the first thing he said. He's like, nice logo. And he doesn't give those out very freely.
Sweet.
So.
Well, love the logo as well. And again, like, and you'll hear me say, the more I talk about Glide, you'll hear me say like more of the other people in the Atlanta world, but the designer who did that is named Brian Steely. He has this kind of made a name for himself for doing these monoline design kind of style. And he's got a big following and just does awesome work for lots of brands. And beer labels and cannabis and kind of everything. So he's an awesome guy. Look him up.
Brian Steely. Got it. Yeah. Cool. So let's get to some more exciting news. There's a Glide 2 coming down the pike. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there. And
I'd be happy to. So there's a brewery that is about to open in Decatur. This is right down the road. It's own incorporated city, but it's in Atlanta. And the brewery is called Inner Voice. And they took over this giant space that used to be like a big Tex Mexican kind of place. So there's Rhett and Josh, who are brewers. They have been brewing in Atlanta, all the breweries for like, or a lot of different breweries for like the last 10 years, and they're setting out to open up their own brewery. The space that they took over has a kitchen in it. It's got a walk-in cooler. It's got a grease trap. It's got a hood. And so they are also customers of mine, and they approached me a couple of months ago and said, hey, we're opening up a brewery. We're beer guys. We're taking over the space as a kitchen. We're looking for a food partner. We don't want to do the food. You know, would you be interested in selling pizza at our brewery? And so, oh my gosh, wow. So went out there and met with them a couple different times and saw their space kind of take shape and come to life. And recently just signed on to begin our build out and move into that space. So that's coming this fall. Super excited to be in there. And what's great about it for us is like, you know, first of all, pizza and beer is like the most famous combination of food pairing ever.
It's a great model. We were actually in New Orleans a few weeks ago, and Nola Brewery has a similar thing that is relatively new that another actual podcaster helped bring to life. So if you haven't checked it out as sort of something to look at, then you should. But it naturally goes together. Plus, I think, am I right that Decatur is home to Emory and all the college kids?
There's a lot of college kids right nearby. Emory's right there. And what's so cool about one of the things I'm excited about. So they were nice enough to cut a giant hole in the wall. So like we have now our walk-up window. I feel like the walk-up window is just going to be central for all future Glides. Like this is just the way that we want to do it. It's a lot easier. So we've got that kind of.
So you facing. Never do indoor. You're only going to do.
I mean, come to we'll the window, see. Get the hell I don't out really want to do.
Never say never, Rob. But yeah. you got a model, and you're sticking to it for now.
Totally, you know, especially you know, given the climate of everything still going on right now. But yeah, so we've got the window. We've got the big hole cut in the wall, so we can sell whole pies and slices out that window. But also, there's a giant window that looks out over there, like tap room and like hangout area. So as people are sitting there enjoying beers throughout the day and the evening, they can also come to us and get slices at our counter. So we kind of have two counters at this place, and that's, you know, pretty exciting for us. Like it's a baby step, you know, we have our window and then we have this other register checkout area. I'm super excited about that and really kind of pumped that they thought to ask us. And they're great guys.
And so this and you're basically, are you like subleasing it from the brewery? Because before we started, I asked what was going on, and Rob said he was in the fifth round of his final lease review, which I think is an experience many people have. So I'm curious to hear how does that work.
Yeah, so they are the master leaseholders for the, you know, they have the relationship with the landlord and I will pay them rent. But like the way that we've set it up is like we're going to try to like maintain the same hours. But also like if they close for a week and need a break, like I can still operate like out of the window. So it's not like a business within a business, but I would say it's like a business side by side with a business.
I would assume that the nature of it, that the rent agreement is more of a rev share situation, or is it a traditional rent?
It's a flat. It's actually not. It's just a regular a monthly rent. So yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. We're excited to hear about number two opening. We're super excited that
are there, before we move on, are there lessons from Glide One that you'll improve on Glide Two that you would change?
Yeah. So I think, you know, dough is the trickiest, always the trickiest thing to, or the most important and the trickiest piece of any kind of pizza operation, especially now as we're heading into July and August here in humid Georgia. So just, you know, we've been doing this now for almost a year, and I think we've got it really kind of dialed in tight, but we've had many, many days where we've flopped on our batches of dough and, you know, just managing the temperature and the humidity kind of in and out of the shop has something.
What do you do when the dough flops? So you can't really like start over. Do you like alter it as best as you can and get it rolling? Do you close for the day?
We've had to close for the day. We've had to close for the day. We've just, you know, prayed that we weren't very busy a couple of days. Like we've just had some, you know, days where the pizzas weren't as sexy as we want them to look. And we just, you know, try and kind of get through it.
In the end of the day, sometimes mistakes are still delicious, but I know what you mean. It's hard to be. Alex and I got an uni like in January and I just nailed our dough. It took me 6 months.
Oh,
and
awesome.
This is
awesome.
Like at home making
small time.
but it's a real thing. Are you doing naturally leavened? Or are you doing a mix? Or are you just doing like regular yeast?
We use a sourdough starter, and a little bit of yeast, to kind of jumpstart it. And
that's
then
my secret sauce too.
We let it sit for 48 hours. So all of our dough has like a 48 hour proof period. And it's, you know, by the time that it ends up on the paper plate of the customer, it's, you know, got this really great, you know, fresh baked bread, sense about it that I think people really dig.
What do you do if, I understand what you do if you don't have enough dough, you sell out and close the shop. What do you do if you have too much dough? Do you just throw in the garbage?
We try not to do that. You know, three-day-old dough is still really good. It's a little more sour. Occasionally we'll have to do that. But we've got it pretty figured out now. Like we know how many batches of dough we're going to need heading into the weekends versus like a Tuesday. So, we've got a really good grasp of that, at this point.
Chef Louis Alexakis has built something of a Greek dining empire in Chicago. He started with Avli Winnetka in 2009, a casual restaurant where he could serve contemporary Greek food and wine in a festive atmosphere. Avli developed a loyal fan base, and in the past few years, the revered Greek-American chef has opened 3 new Avli offshoots in Chicago. Chef Louis uses Tock to power reservations, events, and takeout, which he says has led to creative new revenue streams. And the 24/7 technical support that Tock offers is a game changer. Louis says, with Tock, there's great built-in help and amazing technical support. At some point, I need to send baklava out of the team because they deserve it.
Aww.
To learn more about how Tock powers restaurants, go to exploretock.com/join. That's exploretock, TOCK.com/join.
Awesome. All right, let's go to some lightning round. Tell us your go-to slice at Glide.
I like cheese.
Cheese, plain cheese, classic.
What was your favorite slice shop in New York?
I mean, I would definitely put Polly G's slice shop up there. And I liked, I've only been a handful of times to Scars, but that's, you know, pretty much like those two are my favorites, I'd say.
Yeah, I know that's like asking to pick your favorite child. Feel the same way. What has been your best business resource?
It can be a book, person, podcast, TV show,
whatever. I will say I've listened to almost every single episode of Opening Soon. So again, thank you both so much. One of the great tidbits that I think you may have asked somebody when you were had Mason on from Turkey and the Wolf, you asked him this question. He was like, I got the best accountant imaginable and she handles all my shit. And so he named the company. And I listened to that podcast at a point in my research and discovery phase. I was trying to find the right accountant. I could not find, I must have interviewed 10 of them. Anyway, I went and looked up Margaret from CFO OneSource, who is now my accountant.
You're the same one? That's amazing.
So we have the same account. I have the same accountant as him now, and he was totally right. She is a New Orleans-based accounting firm, women-owned, women-led, and they just get shit done. And so I cannot say enough nice things about Margaret and Kathy and Deanna and the people that I've gotten to know there. And so thanks to Mason and thanks to you guys for turning me on to them.
No, that's cool. Really,
I was going to say thank you to you for, I think in this episode, you've done a really good job of crediting all the people that have helped you. So if whoever's listening, go back, re-listen. The names are there. The people are ready to be contacted to help you get your own business up.
Yeah. And they act like a fractional CFO, it sounds like, too, which is just like beyond helpful, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like they have like business advice, strategy. They're like, we've applied for some of the restaurant relief funds and they had like all that stuff like prepared, ready to go, submit on day one. Like, I mean, they've just been incredible and in all the ways that I am not. So, I mean, they do my payroll, they do my tax. I mean, it's, oh my God, I would be nowhere without them.
That's amazing. This one was not on the sheet, but I am curious, what was the family thinking when you're like, I'm quitting my day job and opening a pizza restaurant?
Thank God my wife has supported this crazy idea and has for a long time. I think she knew that I was ultimately feeling unsatisfied in my previous career. And so she's been incredible. She's had to really step up as a mom, especially, you know, this last year. She also has her own small business. So we're, you know, been at home with two small kids, two small businesses. She works in the morning. I work in the evening. I call it hot potato. She walks in the door and I'm like, here's the kid. Here's the kids. See you later. I mean, she's really my biggest supporter and really proud and, you know, I loved that we've had the traction that we have. And it's just been kind of a wild ride. You know, on the one hand, 2020 was a great year to do something. There wasn't much else to do. So like, it was kind of a great time to focus on some, you know, one thing. And so in that respect, like it was like, all right, well, we're going to open up this pizza shop. But then, you know, on the other hand, it's like, it's a pandemic and you're opening up a restaurant. Like, are you crazy?
The right kind of restaurant, I would say.
The right kind of restaurant. I think, like, you know, like you said earlier too, I think there's less people opening, there's more things closed, and people are excited for something new. So they're you're more likely to get people to try you probably than you would have 2 years ago because there's less new stuff. And you're going to keep them because your pizza is awesome and it looks great and you've got the cool bike and all that kind of stuff. But like, I think that the audience is heightened and ready. And I think I'm impressed and neat to see that you got it done through the pandemic.
Yeah. I feel like if we did it last year, then like, it should be easier going forward. Right. So, at least that's what I keep telling myself.
Yeah. We made it in 2020. You can make it anywhere, I guess.
There you go. Exactly.
So. Awesome. Well, we love the story. We're so happy for you. Congratulations on making it to 1 year and on already expanding to the second location.
Thank you guys. And like a good podcast listener at the end, right before we opened, I ordered, I think, a dozen Tillet aprons with you guys. Yeah. did a wonderful job with our apron, putting our logo on that. And we rock those all the time. So thanks again for that.
Awesome. I love it. Tell us, any opening soon announcements? Anybody you want to shout out? Anybody else opening in Atlanta?
Oh gosh. My friends, Dwayne and the guys who at Supremo Taco, right on Memorial, have this awesome taco stand, and they are getting ready in the next couple of weeks to open up Pollo Supremo, which will be the type of place where you go and get a quarter or a half of rotisserie chicken, tecate, and some and like a side of rice and beans. And so super excited for them. They do a bang up job down here, and and yeah, I think everyone is excited for them to open up.
Is that on the Beltway too?
That is a little closer to East Atlanta Village. The Beltline does not touch that, but it's still, you know, pretty close by.
Cool. What do you got here?
What do I got here? Well, I don't have stuff here. I have Ghost Honkies opening their second location in Colorado, and Salty Donuts, which has been a loyal Tillet fan from the beginning, her opening locations nationwide. So it's really exciting to see them expand. They started just in Florida with one location, but they make ridiculous donuts. They are like, look so good. I wish they had one in New York. Yeah, that's it. That's what I got.
Rob, remind us where people can find you online on Instagram.
Sure thing. Yeah. Well, our website is glidepizza.com, where you can order your, where you can order pizzas, and you can look for us on Instagram at glidepizza.
Wait, do you, can, do people call in like the old days? Like when I was just a kid ordering pizza?
No. So we don't have a phone line, much to the chagrin of some of our customers, but most people get it now. They just order from their phones or their computers.
Cool. And you can find us at Tillet NYC and at We Are Opening Soon. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Thank y'all so much. Take care.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place, and we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.